leader.
Order, order.
We have invested in...
Hello, I'm Rhys Lyon, bringing you The Week in Parliament with Tom Frewen, who begins his report of the week in the House, where the previous one finally ended, coming to the witching hour on Saturday night.
The House stands adjourned till 2pm on Tuesday, the 26th of May.
Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows in the chair when the House ended just under 29 hours in urgency at 8 minutes to 10 on Saturday night. In that time, the government put four bills emerging from Thursday's budget through all their stages, their progress reduced to a crawl by a determined filibuster from an opposition who were unimpressed by this news from the Speaker, David Carter, when the House resumed at 2 on Tuesday.
No bills have been introduced. Order. Order.
Wednesday, the Speaker's daily report on the legislative inbox prompted an ironic cheer.
The clerk has been informed of the introduction of a bill.
A technical measure making minor changes to the Evidence Act of 2006. It went on to the order paper to await a first reading, while the government parked the budget debate for the House to complete the second readings of two bills on Wednesday night. Next day, no new bills, but, as usual, before questions on Thursdays, a preview of the week ahead from the government's business statement, which, in the absence of the Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, and his deputy, Simon Bridges, was read by Social Development Minister Anne Tolley.
Mr Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday, the 2nd of June, the government will look to continue the budget debate and progress a number of first readings on the order paper, including the accident compensation, Financial Responsibility and Transparency Amendment Bill and the Electronic Monitoring of Offenders Legislation Bill. Wednesday is a Members' Day.
Mrs Tolley's business statement drew this comment from the Opposition's Shadow Leader of the House, Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, I note the analysis of the Parliamentary Library indicating that the Parliament currently has the least business before it that it's had in 20 years and wonder whether the Leader of the House has had further opportunity to consider my previous offer to increase the number of Members' Days to ensure that the House is usefully occupied.
Honourable Anne Tolley.
The only comment I'd make to that member is that this is an extremely efficient government.
Not just efficient, but...
This is a very busy government, as we know.
Stephen Joyce, the Minister for All Seasons on Thursdays, required to stand in for absent Cabinet colleagues, including the Minister for Workplace Relations and Safety, Michael Woodhouse, for whom there were questions about reports of unrest in Nationals' ranks over the Health and Safety Reform Bill, currently with a select committee. They included this one from Labour's spokesman on Labour, Ian Lees-Galloway.
Has he been advised which National MPs are revolting against his bill? Is it Chester Burrows, a good bloke sidelined by the Prime Minister
order,
and taking up
order.
Every...
Order, there's no ministerial responsibility.
Stephen Joyce denied that the Health and Safety Reform Bill, introduced in March last year to implement legislative changes in the wake of the Pike River mine disaster, had caused division among National MPs.
Unlike the Labor Party, we don't discuss what happens in our caucus.
But Ian Lees-Galloway was able to pursue the reports of a split in Nationals caucus when the budget debate resumed after question time on Thursday.
I want to know, sir, where those splits and divisions come from. I think there's three suspects.
Only three.
And the first, I cannot name Mr Deputy Speaker, but he's a good man who has played a good role in this Parliament.
The Labour MP named Maurice Williamson as his second suspect before turning to the third.
Ah, yes, the Honourable Judith Collins. With one eye on the leadership, no, two eyes on the leadership and her desire to pay back her enemies double. We know how Judith operates.
Ian Lees-Galloway, who's on the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee, which was to report the bill back to the Chamber on Friday, but earlier this week had the deadline extended by almost 2 months to Friday, July the 24th. He was speaking in the budget debate, which took up around 11 of the 17 sitting hours this week, leaving just 2 hours before its completion in the traditional confidence vote next week. More on that debate now from Rhys Lyon.
While the budget debate is a chance for MPs to critique the government's spending plans, National's Simon O'Connor strayed somewhat from the brief.
I want to just touch briefly, Mr Speaker, on the question of euthanasia, because it keeps cropping up in these spaces.
People will talk about euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide as caring and compassionate, and I want to go on the record very clearly to say that is fundamentally incorrect. It is not genuine care, and it is not genuine compassion. Mr. Speaker, there is no such thing as a right to die. There is a right to life.
And Simon O'Connor did relate all this back to the government's budget.
And so, Mr. Speaker, I am very proud of a government which has put more and more money into palliative care to provide that assistance.
Simon O'Connor was followed by New Zealand First's Clayton Mitchell.
What is the difference between God and Simon O'Connor, should I say, is that God doesn't think that he is Simon O'Connor. And he certainly did suck the life out of this room in the last few minutes. It's a little bit towards the end of our budget debates, and so everybody's feeling a little bit tired, but I fear to say that just about drowned us in sleep and woeful sort of thoughts. Certainly a debate that would come up later in time. We'd certainly love to have it with you with regards to the right to die.
Back to the budget, and another take on National's performance came from Labor's Reno Tirukatani.
What they've done is they've mismanaged our economy, only looked after their rich mates, tax cuts for the rich. They're the ones that have benefited, and the rest of New Zealand have been languishing and suffering.
A claim taken personally by Health Minister Jonathan Coleman.
Well, I'm really hurt by that speech. That was very, very nasty by the member for Te Tai Tonga. And my advice to him is he needs to cheer up because it just ain't that bad. He needs to get out and talk to his constituents in the Greater Wellington region and throughout the South Island. And my advice is he should spend a lot less time with Andrew Little because it's having a really negative effect on that member's outlook on the economy, that member's outlook on life.
Health Minister Jonathan Coleman and another government minister to speak in the budget debate was Conservation Minister Maggie Barry.
I am about to declare war on weeds. DOC spends around $10 million a year on operational weed control. You might ask why I'm not tempted to spray a bit of a round on the opposition's benches, but I'm not that kind of person. But when it comes to weed control, we really do need to get specific. I want to engage the hearts and minds of New Zealanders to join with us in this fight, because the suffocation of our New Zealand native forests, these are the sort of reasons why we need to try and combat the weed problem.
Maggie Barry was followed by Labor's Phil Twyford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's always good to follow poison ivy.
Mr. Twyford used his speech to focus on housing, though he wasn't sure exactly where to direct his concerns.
We have three ministers of housing, actually, in this government. Three ministers. Nick Smith, Bill English, and Paula Bennett. I think John Key should appoint three more, because since he announced those three ministers of housing, Auckland housing prices have gone up by $60,000 since those three ministers were announced.
And the tables were turned when Housing Minister Nick Smith used his 10-minute slot to critique Labor leader Andrew Little's response to the budget.
And then we had the clangers from Andrew Little. The big priority for Labor, the issue that's going to make the difference, gender reassignment surgery. Now, I don't know about my colleagues on this side of the House. All the time we get bailed into court. What's the government doing about gender reassignment surgery? That's the number one priority for members opposite, and they wonder why they are in the polls.
Not funny, said outgoing Greens co-leader Russell Norman.
The jokes about gender reassignment surgery are pretty disgusting and they're ugly, and I think they should stop.
Māori Party co-leader Marama Fox, meanwhile, chose to highlight her party's influence on the government's spending on poverty.
And so we are proud to be able to put our hand on our heart and say, yes, that $790 million is as a result of influence from being at the table and not under the table, not eating the crumbs. Those are some fairly expensive crumbs, if that's what people believe.
Meanwhile, Bill English's seventh budget inspired Green MP Kennedy Graham to appeal to a higher power.
God help us.
And National's Melissa Lee was equally to the point.
Australia may have cuddly koalas, but New Zealand has John Key.
National's Melissa Lee, quoting from an article on the benefits of living on this side of the Tasman.
Rhys Lyon, and he'll be back shortly with a report from the committee rooms. Back in the chamber, though, some idle speculation from Labour leader Andrew Little on the potential for means-testing National Super led to this attack on him by the Prime Minister John Key in Tuesday's Question Time.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Little can spend all his time in Question Time asking his questions if he wants, but the real question is, will he get back on side with his caucus, who now hate him because he's polling 25% because he wants to means test New Zealand Super? It ain't going well, Andrew.
Order.
The Prime Minister launched his attack across the chamber with some help from his National Party's chief whip.
Supplementary question, Tim McIndoe.
Thank you, sir, to the Prime Minister. What reports has the Prime Minister received on other approaches to managing retirement savings policy?
Provided it's within the Prime Ministerial responsibility, I call the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, I've seen a number of conflicting reports on other approaches to retirement savings policy. One included a question about means testing New Zealand Super. The answer was, and I quote, "Yep, I don't think we can avoid looking at that."
That earned Mr Key and his chief whip a rebuke from the Speaker, David Carter.
It is not reasonable to use questions from the governing party or its support party simply to attack other members in the House.
Mr Carter then got into a stoush with Winston Peters when the New Zealand First Leader included in a supplementary question a phrase from Andrew Little's primary question.
Renege on any other commitments.
Order, can I just have the supplementary question without...
You're getting it right now. I'm relating it to the primary question.
Order. Member will resume his seat.
The Speaker said that was already built into the rules requiring supplementary questions to have some relationship with their primary question.
There is no need for an introduction about relating it to the primary question. I don't want to have to repeat this for the member. We will be moving to somebody else if I need to.
Mr. Speaker, with the greatest respect, and I have been here longer than you.
Order.
If I intend there to be some relativity to what I'm about to ask, to the primary question, that's up to my discretion. With the greatest respect, this is the first time I've had someone make the ruling you've just made from that chair.
The Speaker then made good on a threat to move the next question along the opposition front bench.
I have the right to decide where I'll take a supplementary question. I warned the member that he would not get a second chance. I'm going to hear one from Andrew Little.
Mr. Peters objected.
Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Mr Speaker, you did not tell me that I would not get a supplementary question.
Order.
You've decided arbitrarily to do that now.
Order. The member will now leave the chamber.
So Mr Peters became the third MP to be ejected from the chamber in the last 7 days, following Labour's Grant Robertson on Wednesday and fellow New Zealand First MP Ron Mark, sent out by Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows on Friday, and back in the chamber with this question for the Prime Minister.
When he said in the House, quote, "get some guts," was he talking to opposition parties or the Iraqi army, which has been in retreat for the last 2 months and was routed at Ramadi by a force they outnumbered 10 to 1?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Speaker, well, really specifically, I was speaking to the Leader of the Opposition, who I think in his heart of hearts knows the right thing for this country to do on a bipartisan basis is actually to stand up to the people who undertake these atrocities, and I hope he will eventually see it our way because we are right on this side of the House.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, Ron Mark.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Does the Prime Minister agree with the US Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman, General Martin Dempsey, who said, quote, "the Iraqi security force was not driven out of Ramadi, they drove out of Ramadi"?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, I'm not going to be a Monday morning quarterback on what happened in Ramadi, but I have seen the comments from Prime Minister Albardi, who says that they're keen to retake that ground. Certainly the advice that we've had is some ground is lost and some ground is gained. And I simply say to the member, if he thinks that isn't going to increase the risks to New Zealanders, then it's really unbelievable. And if the member wants to go out there and tell New Zealanders that he's quite prepared through his own inactions to put them at greater risk, then he's welcome to go and campaign on doing that, but he'll run a million miles from that when I start pointing it out publicly, and that's what I intend to do.
Ron Mark's request for a snap debate on the subject was one of three lodged with the Speaker on Tuesday.
I have received a letter from the Honourable Annette King seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the failure of the negotiations between government agencies and relationships Aotearoa. This is a particular case of recent occurrence involving ministerial responsibility. The failure of the negotiations with government agencies was reported by Relationships Aotearoa yesterday. The negotiations concern the level of future government funding for the service. The House is this week debating the 2015-16 budget, and the departmental estimates are currently before select committees for examination. The budget debate will provide the opportunity to discuss the matter today, and the estimates examinations the opportunity to consider it in detail and to debate it further when select committee reports on the estimates are considered in the committee of the whole House. On this basis, the matter raised does not meet the test for me to set aside the business of the House today. The application is therefore declined. I have also received a letter from Dr. David Clark seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the announcement today that the Sky City Convention Centre design will be downsized. This is a particular case of recent occurrence involving ministerial responsibility. The revised design was announced today by the Minister for Economic Development, and the government is party to the agreement to build the Convention Centre. However, the business of the House should not be set aside just because a ministerial announcement has been made, even though it may be important. There must be such an element of urgency that the matter must take precedence over other business. In this instance, I am not persuaded there is an element of urgency that warrants the setting aside of the business of the House. The application is therefore declined. I have further received a letter from Ron Mark seeking to debate Understanding Order 389, the advance of ISIS to within an hour's range of the Taji base and the Iraqis' lack of will to fight. The matters outlined in Mr. Mark's letter does not constitute a particular case of recent occurrence and does not involve a ministerial responsibility. The advance of ISIS and the state of the Iraqi army are not matters for which there is ministerial responsibility. The government's decision to deploy troops to Iraq was announced in February of this year and was debated in the House at that time. Because the application does not meet any of the criteria for an urgent debate set out in Standing Order 389, it is declined.
Tuesday also saw the first questions about a deal involving multi-million dollar payments to a Saudi businessman and shipments by air of live sheep to a government-funded farm in the desert. As Rich Lyon reports, the issue was first raised in the House by the Green List MP, James Shaw.
On Tuesday, Mr. Shaw put questions about sheep exports to Foreign Affairs Minister Murray McCulley.
How many of the 900 ewes that flew to Saudi Arabia on Singapore Airlines in October 2014 at the taxpayers' expense are still alive?
Honourable Murray McCulley.
Mr. Speaker, officials confirm that all of the 900 ewes arrived in Saudi Arabia in good condition. The nature of the project being undertaken in Saudi Arabia makes it impossible for me to provide a specific answer to the question that he asks. However, officials advise that according to the most recent reports, the answer is approximately 850.
Supplementary question, James Shaw.
Why do recent satellite pictures of New Zealand Trade and Enterprise's $7.5 million agri-hub in Saudi Arabia to which the sheep were flown show no visible livestock farming in the middle of the desert?
The Honourable Murray McCulley.
Speaker, I've received recent reports from officials and from those who are superintending the project who tell me that what is a partially completed project is proceeding well. I don't know what images the member refers to, but what I'll say is that the Green Party are difficult to please on this matter. They wanted us to ban the export of live sheep for slaughter, and the government has renewed that export prohibition. They wanted us to have regard for animal welfare matters, and so the government flew the sheep for the pilot on Singapore Airlines. If the member is telling us that he wants us to fly them business class next time, that's something we'll give consideration to.
Murray McCulley also faced questions on the matter on Wednesday from New Zealand First leader Winston Peters.
Minister, is this not a fact that this is a new low in our international relationships and that this is a multi-million dollar bribe that has been given to private interests in Saudi Arabia? Is that not a fact?
The Honourable Murray McKelly.
Mr. Speaker, I've made it clear that the officials who were dealing with this matter would have had on their minds the damage that had been done to New Zealand's trading relationship with Saudi Arabia and the wider Gulf, as well as having on their minds the exposure of the New Zealand government to a substantial claim for damages resulting from the actions of a government of which the Right Honourable Member was a member.
And there were also questions from Labor's David Parker.
Who was paid the first $4 million in respect of the multi-million dollar payments to Saudi Arabian interests?
Order. I'm going to ask the member to start the question again.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Who was paid the first $4 million in respect of the multi-million dollar payments to Saudi Arabian interests referred to in the Cabinet paper of 13 February 2013 he tabled yesterday? And how was the value calculated and split between, quotes, intellectual property which the Saudi investor brings to the platform, the services and in-market networks he will contribute, and the settlement of the long-running dispute?
The Honourable Speaker, Murray McKelly.
Speaker, $4 million was paid to Hamoud Al-Ali Al-Khalaf Trading and Transportation under a contract for services between MFAT and Hamoud Al-Ali Al-Khalaf Trading and Transportation. The value was identified in negotiations between the parties. This was a process overseen by senior Ministry of Foreign Affairs officials, and the final agreement was signed out by the Secretary of Foreign Affairs with the support of myself as Foreign Minister and that of the Cabinet.
Point of order, the Honourable David Parker.
My question asks for the split between those different cost centres.
Order. The question very clearly did. If the Minister could address that part of the question as to the split of the $4 million.
Mr. Speaker, the matters that were considered by the officials who conducted the negotiations are referred to very fully in the Cabinet paper that I tabled in the House yesterday. They relate to all of the costs associated with shifting the operations previously based in New Zealand to a new hub in Saudi Arabia. They included the intellectual property of the Al-Khalaf Group and the access to their physical location in Saudi Arabia, and, as I say, many other items that are enumerated in the Cabinet paper I tabled in the House yesterday.
And Thursday saw this question from James Shaw.
Would he say that bribing Saudi businessmen ain't working? That's not the way you do it. He's got your money for nothing and your sheep for free.
Speaker. The Honourable Murray McKelly.
No.
That report from Rhys Lyon. He'll be back shortly with his report from the committee rooms. But first, here's the mystery voice.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery voice.
Mr. Speaker, I have been following the reactions of the Chinese community. I'm very pleased to say that the reactions from the Chinese community has been very, very positive.
Who is the mystery voice and what is he talking about? Here he is again.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery voice.
Mr. Speaker, I have been following the reactions of the Chinese community. I'm very pleased to say that the reactions from the Chinese community has been very, very positive.
I'll be back with the identity of the mystery voice after this report about the week in the committee rooms from Rhys Lyon.
Two petitions calling for an inquiry into the billing practices of the Central North Island electricity infrastructure provider, the Lyons Company, were up before the Commerce Committee on Thursday. Presenting the petition of Alistair McNab and 2,400 others was Roger Donkin.
We are not a lobby group, as the Lyons Company has alleged, but a group of ordinary citizens who have been drawn together through common unsatisfactory dealings with the Lyons Company and whose concerns to date have been ignored. Thousands of good people have been marginalised and disadvantaged. At the very least, I am certain that the 2,400 consumers who signed my petition expect that the committee will recommend a full and independent inquiry.
Mr. Donkin was joined by Clive Gifford, who explained why the petitioners felt the Lyons Company's practice of charging for peak electricity was unfair.
Because what it is measuring is the six highest two-hour measurements. There's only 12 hours of usage that set your rates for the whole of the following next year. I know this is rather technical, but the problem is that by only using those six two-hour periods, if a customer has some sort of understanding and tries to reduce their load, what they have to do is not fail at all for a whole year.
And the Lions Company bosses also fronted up to the Commerce Committee to defend their practice of charging for peak demand, as outlined by Representative David Reid.
The network has to have the capacity to meet its peak demand, not its average demand, its peak. So by charging customers directly for the influence they have on the capacity of the network rather than the energy they consume, customers get a real price signal that works to reduce the investment needed in network capacity. So this has real benefits for the customer, as they inevitably end up with a bill that reflects network investment. So the less network investment, the lower the customer's account.
The committee later heard from Commerce Commission Chairman Mark Berry, who said that following over 650 hours spent looking into complaints about the Lions Company, the Commerce Commission had found some issues, but nothing of substantive concern.
Look, you know, if we were to put any company through the level of scrutiny we have put the Lions Company through, the chances are we would reach a view that there might be something at risk of breaching the Fair Trading Act. You know, our response needs to be proportionate, as I believe it has been in this case. We are prepared to state that the peak demand pricing approach, in principle, is consistent with efficient network pricing.
Commerce Commission Chairman Mark Berry, and those petitions remain under consideration of the Commerce Committee. Also in the committee rooms during the week, the Finance and Expenditure Committee was briefed on an Auditor General's report on Auckland City Council's handling of building consents and heard from Auditor General's Office Local Government Sector Manager Sarah Lynham, who outlined the Council's compliance with deadlines for building consent processing.
Auckland Council for 2013-14 year achieved, against the statutory deadline, 98.5% of applications were processed within the statutory deadline, so that's 20 working days. However, that doesn't include the time when the application goes on hold, which is allowed within the Act, so there's about 70% of applications did go on hold. This shows that there is a significant gap between what the applicant expects they need to provide when they place the application and what council actually requires.
Ms. Lynham also put forward the report's three main recommendations to the Auckland Council.
The first was that they move as soon as possible to the introduction of electronic lodgement. So we found that the paper-based process at the moment takes an enormous amount of time and direct cost. There's a phenomenal amount of paper involved in that process, and there would be benefits for applicants and for the council's processing if they move to electronic lodgement. Our second main recommendation was on reducing the average processing time. And our third main recommendation was around communications. And so while we said they are performing to a reasonable standard, we think there are opportunities there for them to communicate better.
Auditor General's Office Local Government Sector Manager Sarah Lynham speaking to the Finance and Expenditure Committee. And across the corridor from that meeting on Wednesday, the Government Administration Committee was scheduled for a public briefing from Treasury officials on the budget estimates process. But at the last minute, committee members decided that that meeting would be held behind closed doors. In total, there were 15 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Now for the Mystery Voice.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery Voice.
Mr. Speaker, I have been following the reactions of the Chinese community. I'm very pleased to say that the reactions from the Chinese community has been very, very positive.
That's Jian Yang, a National Party List MP based in Auckland, and he was speaking in the budget debate.
Mr. Speaker, this is a great budget. This is a budget delivered by a very capable, very responsible government. Now, the Nationalist government have a proven record of responsibly managing our finance.
Jian Yang speaking in the budget debate, which resumed this week with just under 2 hours left to go. More on our webpage, parliamenttoday.co.nz. I'm Tom Fruin, and I'll be back with Rhys Lyon and another report funded by Parliament at the same time next week.